Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called Living in an Intentional Community. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the line this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Asparide Ananis. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Asparide a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website prior to the call. Now, I first actually met Asparide a couple of months ago on a remarkable workshop called Realize that I was introduced to or invited along to by a very good friend of mine, David Pearl. And I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to witness Asparide working live, and hopefully we'll have a lot of opportunity to talk about her own personal work, but also had the opportunity to hear all about Damanhur and the Damanhur community and the remarkable work that the community is actually bringing through to inspire the world. And I just thought it would be a phenomenal subject matter to explore, because I'm always interested in new concepts or ideas or just practices that are breaking the status quo and bringing about real possibility for true transformation in the world. Now, Asparide is a writer, a lecturer, and also the communications director for the Damanhur community. She's also fluent in 5 different languages as well, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome her to the call this evening. Hello, Asparide.
Hi, Damien. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having invited me to be on this wonderful seminar tonight.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Now, Asparide, I just thought I'd just begin by asking you about the actual theme of the teleseminar is living in an intentional community. And I was just wondering if you could, first of all, just describe what it actually means to live with intention, and how does living with intention actually apply in a community context?
Mm-hmm. Sure, interesting question. Intentional community refers to the idea that it's a group of people that got together with a shared idea, with a shared dream. So not just even to be living in a specific town or, you know, a district of a town, and then just because they are there, they continue living there. Here, it implies the fact there was a group of people, and is now a larger even group of people, that have chosen to live together, to settle in a specific part of Italy in this case, to create something new, to really create a social laboratory. So the intention is that of being the first ones to test out new ideas, paradigms, and, you know, ways that we can live more sustainably.
Great. And can you tell me a little bit more about the community and how it was founded? Like, how long has it been in existence for? And I guess maybe the vision of the founding forefathers.
Yeah. The original vision was that if you want to create something new in society, and if you want to follow a spiritual idea, you cannot just do it on weekends. So the founding fathers and mothers, for that, as you call them, it was men and women equally, they used to meet in a center in Torino. So we are settled in northern Italy, north of Turin. And they would do studies together, weekends together of research in alternative medicines. And what in those years, which was the 70s, was called everything that had to do with the paranormal. And then they realized that, you know, this was really not enough. So they started going around the world to find a place that would have good energetic characteristics. And, you know, it was very kind of funny that after 2 years of travel, they found the perfect place not too far from where they lived. So they bought some land, and they started building new homes. And in the beginning, it was a dozen people. Then the first settlers were about 35, and we are about 1,000 in the valley now. So if you come to visit us, which I hope you will soon, you won't just find one settlement with a gate, but we have about 75 different settlements, including homes and farms and workshops all over the valley.
Wow.
So that we are spread all over the valley. In between, of course, are the local people who live here. And we've been in existence now for about 35 years. We are at the third generation. So last year, two girls were born. They were daughters of kids born in Davenport, and this year a boy also. So we have now three new Davenportians at the third generation.
Wow, that's amazing. And so to begin from a dozen people and then to grow into 1,000 people was something quite remarkable. I was just wondering, what kind of impact did that actually have on the local residents? Were they welcoming when the community moved into the valley, or were they a little bit, skeptical when the group was formed?
Well, yeah, they're still kind of skeptical now, many of them, but this is quite a special situation. We are in northern Italy, and this valley was completely abandoned in the 60s. Because everybody moved to go and work at Fiat, you know, the big car company, or Olivetti, that those years was making typewriters. And these were two of Italy's main companies. So when we moved here, or the founding fathers and mothers moved here, what they found was basically an abandoned valley. And those who had stayed were over 60. You know, so this was the average age was of 60. There were no schools, no stores, nothing. Just imagine a mountain valley that had been completely abandoned. So the ones who had stayed here were the ones that were, if you will, less adventurous, the ones that did not want to move. And so, of course, they were not very welcoming because they thought we were strange. You know, what do these people want? Why are they coming to the valley? And now, of course, things have changed. Our settlements are spread over 5 different towns, and in one of them, the mayor and the whole council are Damanorians, elected also by the local people. So, you know, in many ways, the situation has completely changed. But there are still some local people that think, you know, just because most of us were not born here, we should not be here. But I guess this is normal. It happens with everybody that wants to do something innovative and different.
Absolutely. And I was just wondering, just with your own personal journey, Asperidae, what was it that initially drew you to the community, and what then inspired you to become the actual spokesperson as well for the community?
One of the remarkable things about Damano, one of the things for which Damano is mostly known, is the fact that its citizens built in a complex of temples inside the mountain, an underground complex of temples called the Temples of Humankind. In 1992, this is when I first got in touch with Damanor, the temples were secret. They had been built in secret for 16 years because there were no laws regulating underground buildings, so basically there was no authority to ask permission to. So the Damanorians who lived here at that time decided to build the temples because they wanted to create this beautiful place dedicated to universal spirituality. And then they thought, well, and then when they're ready, when they're finished, we'll tell the world about them, and we'll find a solution for this building permit that we don't have. You know, they built in their own land, so it was really just a matter of getting a building permit. Things didn't go this way. A former member of the community who had left 10 years before all of a sudden started blackmailing them to say, I'll tell the police if you don't give me money, and I'll tell them you have this underground building. Now, building an underground building without permit is not a big crime, but if you are in Italy and this is not a Christian or Catholic church, then, you know, you can imagine this can create a lot of problems. So he thought he was going to get money from the community. The community, of course, decided not to pay. So this guy came back with the police. The police had explosives and all sorts of technicians to blow the mountain up because they couldn't find where the temples were. So the community members decided to open the doors of the temple to the judge. The judge entered, and he was convinced that he would find something horrible. When he came out, he was moved, he was in tears, and said, I'm so sorry, I had no idea what you were doing. I'll do everything I can to help you. And one of the things he did is said, I'm not telling the press, because if this story comes from me, from the judge, you can imagine the title from the newspaper. For sure, they'll call you a cult, and then it will be very difficult to find a solution. So he kept his word, and that's how I got involved. At that time, I was working in Milano, and I knew all the Italian journalists, through a friend of mine, they knew of my existence, so I received one day a very strange phone call from a guy in Damanhur. You know, here we use animal and plant names. So Esteride ananas means sunset butterfly pineapple in Italian. So I was in my office in Milano, and I received a strange phone call from a guy called Elk Beach. And this man invited me to come to Damanhur because they had something important to tell me. I didn't want to go. It was summer. It was hot. I wanted to go to the beach, but then eventually I said, okay, I'll come and hear what you have to say. They took me to, yeah, it was like, okay, you know, I'll come. And so they took me to see the temples, and I was really, really struck. I was struck at a personal level because some of the symbols that I saw in there, it was like, I felt like I knew them already. So I felt I was actually opening doors inside of me, not doors inside of this building in a mountain. That was just a metaphor for something I had inside. And then I was really struck also at the thought of these people that for 16 years have been building in secret, you know, as devotional work to create this as a gift to humanity. So I thought, well, I think these people really deserve my help. So I got involved with that to, you know, how to tell the world about this building and understanding, first of all, myself, what the building meant and why they had done it. And then after that, I got involved more and more, and I saw that not only the temples were interesting, but also the whole society that had been created around this spiritual center, this human and social futuristic laboratory for humanity. And so I decided to stay, to move from Milano, go live there, which was not easy in the beginning at all because, you know, I've always lived in big cities before, Milano, New York, Brussels, so it was kind of weird to move to this little mountain village. And now, 16 years later, I'm very happy. I have the best, I think. I live in this wonderful, incredible place that we invent together every day. Every day is different. Every day you can experiment with something different. And at the same time, I travel around the world, and I get to meet amazing people that are really doing important work for the sustainability of our planet.
Wow. It's really quite amazing. lots of different threads in there that are fascinating.
Sorry, I spoke a lot. It's just it was difficult to condense, you know, 16 years of story.
Wow. That's amazing. And like amazing the effect that it had on you personally, but also on the effect it had on the judge as well when he was exposed to the beauty of the temples.
Yeah, and it's been a long-lasting friendship now. You know, this was 16 years ago, and this judge last year organized a big conference in Damanhur in which he invited other judges to discuss how it could be possible that a community like ours could inspire a different approach to creating norms, a different approach to how to handle the judiciary system, because in Italy things are not going too well. Not only, unfortunately, things are not going well in Italy, as you know, our government is kind of strange, to say the least, in recent years. So this judge has been very committed also in denouncing what is not working in our legal system. He has already written two books, and so now he's really, you know, he's made a complete turnaround and is actually seeing that there are things that we are experimenting with that can be of value. We have our own constitution, so of course we follow all of the Italian rules and regulations. And on top of that, we have decided that we wanted to create our own constitution so that it could be based on ideals, shared dreams, and, you know, ethical values.
Wow. Amazing. And I was just also curious about there are many communities around the world, and I was just wondering, what is it specifically about Damanhur that makes it different to other communities?
Well, I think the beauty of communities today is exactly that they are different. There are some very interesting experiments, you know, like, for instance, Oroville in India, Finhorn in Scotland. There are several communities in Germany, some in the United States. And what I think is really important is the fact that now there is a strong connection among communities. So we are members of GEN, the Global Eco-Village Network, that really gathers communities from around the world, because it's only through this diversity and unity at the same time that we can really express a different voice in the world. So our uniqueness is that, of course, we were born out of, you know, this big dream of creating the temples, but at the same time also creating our own currency. We have our own schools. I already mentioned the constitution, schools, and education system also for adults. The idea that you can really experiment with every facet of life, not just one. And our dream is a little bit that everybody can become a true Renaissance man or woman. So you're not just one thing, but you find a way to express the different parts that compose you. We did a little bit of this work together. You realize, Damien, this idea of exploring that, yeah, that each one of us has different personalities inside. So if you start with this idea, then you can see that if you really want to be a fully realized human being, you have to find ways in which you can express your different parts. Not just working, not just being a family person, but working, family, and playing, and the arts, and all forms of expression.
Absolutely. And now's probably a perfect time to actually chat a little bit more about the Realize workshop that I had the opportunity to experience. And I just found it, like I've been on so many different personal development workshops over the course of my life, but the Realize experience was really quite remarkable in the way that it blended psychology and coaching and NLP and the performing arts to still life photography. I guess that space really enabled all the different aspects of our personalities to start awakening and coming alive. And like I particularly loved the segments that you ran, Asparado, just around the human psyche and how that plays a role in how we actually live day to day. And I was just wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about that aspect of your work.
Sure, also because it's very relevant to the idea of community. So in our research and in our, you know, everyday interactions, we really discovered that each one of us is a multiple person. So not just one eye, you know, we tend to identify with one person, but if we listen really carefully inside, there are many voices inside of us. And very often this is considered as a dysfunction. So if you hear voices, this is not good. What we say is actually all of this is a wealth you can tap into. And it's important to become aware of how these different parts of us manifest. So you can have parts that are more mature, you can have parts that are less mature but more creative. And it's through the harmonious integration of all of these parts that we can become whole and we can become happy and realized. So then you can see why community becomes so important, because if you live in community, you share spaces and everyday life with others, each one of the other persons with you can really become a mirror for the parts that you have inside. So you become more aware that you are a group because you are interacting in a group. And also, only within a broader context, or just with one person or maybe two other people, you know, as the mononuclear family tends to be, but in a vaster context where people really care for one another and for each other's growth, then you can find a very good ground, a good terrain for your own growth and to manifest and really identify who you are. What is your uniqueness? How can you be unique if you're alone? You can only be unique and shine when everybody else also is unique and shining at the same time.
Mm. Excellent. And, there's one other concept that you brought up earlier on as well, Asparado, just on diversity and unity. And just to be able to take those two seemingly disparate concepts and bring them together, but and also sort of adding on to the concept that you just shared there, like allowing each and every single individual to really celebrate what's absolutely unique about themselves, but also the things about their personality that unites them with everyone else as well, is really quite remarkable. And I was just wondering how the community itself encourages that unique self-expression within a community context.
Well, yeah, there are many practical ways which I will tell you a little bit about. Before, I would just like to add on this that, you know, I think that unfortunately, especially in our Western society, we've been kind of brought up to think that in order to be unique, you have to diminish others, that you can be the best that you can only at the expenses of others. in our vision, it is exactly the opposite. You can be the best of yourself only if you allow others also to be the best of themselves. So it can only be an equal process. So if you start living with this assumption within you, it's, you know, the level of interaction you have with people automatically changes. And then, of course, we have this whole system that helps us do that. First of all, everyday life, we live in large homes. You know, as I said, this was an abandoned valley. So when we came here, we bought a lot of these very old, large mountain homes, and we have restored them. So our normal family, it's about 20 people, which includes older people, couples, single people, couples who have children, and we all live together as the families of the past used to do, with the difference that here people really choose with whom they want to live according to the project, their affinities, what their dreams are. And by living together with so many people every day, you really learn to appreciate the differences of others and also to become more tolerant, first of all, with yourself and then also with others, because you can see that everybody has wonderful aspects and everybody has other parts of themselves that need a little bit of work. And you realize that we really are all the same, that each one of us is on the same journey. And so you just start really changing the way you perceive, you know, the other person, and therefore the way you perceive yourself as somebody on a journey. Maybe if you like this metaphor, you can imagine that, you know, we're all like divine beings trying to reawaken to our own divinity. And as I'm doing this, I also recognize that everybody else around me is doing it. And this is very powerful. You know, just the fact that you welcome this thought and you live by it changes very much the way you interact.
And like you mentioned that you had lived primarily in cities up until actually moving out to the Dharma and Her community. I was just wondering if you experienced any personal challenges in adapting to your new living environment.
Oh, lots. Lots, you know, like, oh no, I'm just thinking that in the beginning when I moved here, there were the simplest things that people here did, you know, also Zamanurians who have been here for many years could do very easily, like light a fire, you know, or a bonfire. That seemed very simple, and for me it was almost impossible. And I remember my friends laughing and just saying, okay, she's from Milan. You know, it was like that said everything. Yeah, very funny. I had some very interesting situations in the forest and stuff. And now I've learned, you know. Now, actually, sometimes during my seminar, I actually get to teach people how you create a good bonfire and how you get in touch with fire as an element.
Wow.
So I think I've learned a lot.
That's an amazing transformational story.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And I'm much happier now. I mean, I still need my, you know, city dwelling time from time to time. So, you know, last weekend I went to Milan to a rock concert. But, you know, I can do everything. I can have both worlds. But I have to say that my life here now is much more balanced. And also, I really learned to appreciate the presence of nature. It's amazing. I mean, cities are fantastic. I always love them. And there is a certain energy to them. But being able to tune into what nature has to tell us is very transformational. And I think it's very good for, you know, our health. It's very good for the level of thoughts that we have in our heads. I really noticed a big difference in that. I don't think I could live in a city now.
Yeah, yeah. And can anyone actually move into the Dharma and Her community, or is there a protocol or a vetting process that you go through before someone can actually move there?
Everybody's absolutely welcome to come here, visit us, visit the temples. Actually, really encourage people to come visit and be inspired by what we do and maybe even do better than we've done so far. In order to come and live here, you really have to want it, which means that you have to know us a little bit. So you can just, you know, pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm moving there, and, you know, it's a family of eight, because then it could be difficult. So we ask people to come here as visitors first and then get to know us, maybe take some seminars, just take their time to see what we're about and how we live and to really feel if this is something that they can see them doing, if they feel this is the life they would like. And then if that is so, then yes, we do have specific programs in which people test out how we live. So, you know, groups of people that want to become citizens, that start living together as we do, and figure out, you know, how this is done and how they want to do it. If everything works well and people are happy and we're happy with them, then yes, there is a formal moment in which people declare, I want to become a citizen of this community. And from that moment on, we consider them as resident citizens. And this is for the residents. Of course, we now also have lots of people that come and live in the valley near us. They don't want to be part of the community, you know, resident citizens, but they are interested in our project. So maybe they buy their own house, and then we share certain parts of our research, of our activities.
Right. Sounds amazing. Now, Esperide, I mentioned earlier on in the call I was going to ask some questions that have been submitted in from our listeners. So I'm just going to ask you one from... This is from Vera, and Vera is in the United Kingdom. And Vera asks, how does a group finance such a project and work out ownership? And if a member leaves, how does that work out financially? Also, do volunteers live there and those who do not put any money into the community?
So can you, hi Vera, I'll try to answer your question, but can you please give them to me again in order?
Okay, cool. So it's just really about the financial structure. Vera asks, how does a group finance projects and work out ownership? And if a member leaves, how does it work out financially?
Okay. So the first question, how do we finance our projects? We have changed our economic structure many times. When Domino started, because it was a very small group of people, it was really working as a socialist commune. So everybody put everything they had together. They decided, you know, how to go about building a house or buy new land and all of that, you know, all together, consensus, and everybody put it in what they could. Now that we're about 1,000 citizens, the situation is very different. So we have evolved our model. What we have now is we have created several companies, and also we have people that have, you know, a job outside of the community, like me, for instance, as you know. So everybody has their own job, and we contribute with a percentage of our income to the family in which we live. So like any normal family. So on top of the Italian taxes, we also choose to contribute to the family in which we live. With that money that we put together, we decide what we want to do. If we want to buy new land, if we want to help the schools, if we want to, you know, I don't know, put new trees in the garden. So it's really decided at the family level. But we believe that every citizen has the possibility of contributing, and that is important. So we don't have people that don't contribute anything. If you can't contribute money, you can for sure contribute work. So another thing that we do is that we all offer hours of devotional work to the community in the vast sense. So we have about 150 people who are volunteers for the Red Cross, the local Red Cross, which we actually opened because it didn't exist, fire brigades, civil protection. So the idea of volunteer work, not just for other Damanurians, but most of all for the people of the valley.
Right. So look.
And then there was if people leave.
Yeah, so the second part of the question was, what happens if a member leaves the community, or how does it actually work out financially?
If people leave and they put money into the community, they have been given shares of our cooperatives. So the real estate in Damano is owned by everybody through a system of real estate co-ops, which means if I want to give Damano £1,000, say, I give Damano that money and I get £1,000 in shares, which means when I leave, I can sell the shares to Damano again, so the property is not divided and I get back what I put in.
Great. Interesting.
And lots of people don't put in anything, so in that case, you know, they don't have anything to claim back. And in most cases, if they need help, you know, when they need help, we always help them. So if they need money for the transition, we always do.
Right. And you mentioned the family unit. So a family unit's considered the group of 20 or so people that are living under the one roof.
Exactly. Yes. And very often, you know, as a family, we take upon ourselves projects for the whole of the community. For instance, to give you an idea, my family, a few years ago, we started Damanor's Bakery, which means that we, all of us of the family, we got a loan, we financed the project, we bought the machines, we created a bakery for the whole of the community, which is a private company, you know, that belongs to us. We have shares, and also we have the responsibility for it. So this is an example of how we can finance the different projects and things. For the temples of humankind, most of it has been, most of the building of the complex has been financed by the founder of Damanor, because in the beginning we had, you know, this inspiration still lives in community, and he said, this is really, you know, as much as I can, I'm going to be the one financing it for many years. Now we have many visitors, so when visitors come give a contribution, that also helps maintaining the temples. And we are soon going to start a fundraiser, because what we have now for the temples is actually not enough. So this is something we're working on how to find ways to make it more sustainable.
Great. Now, I've got a question from Amanda in the United Kingdom. And Amanda asks, how do you actually deal with conflict within the community?
Always, constantly, of course. Yes. Conflict is part of human nature. For sure, I have to say we do not have a very high level of aggressiveness. This is something that is noticed by everybody. Maybe also because we're not afraid of conflict. So conflict can be destructive, and it can also be turned around and used as an energy to solve things if you start out of respect for the other person. So if you always remember that the reason our body is always right or wrong, but you know, reality is always a meeting point of two points of view. So in Damanor we have the concept that we call the quasi-real, which means that each one of us lives in a reality which is almost real, a quasi-real, because it's through my own perception of austerity that I can perceive the world, and you can only perceive the world through Damien.
Right.
So, right? So I'm not right, and you're not wrong, and vice versa. So if we have a problem, and we start from the assumption that, you know, we have different perceptions, and then probably the truth of the reality meets in between our perceptions, we can have a discussion without needing to destroy one another just because we want to be right. If, though, it happens that people do not get along and they really cannot find a solution, then we have two different ways to deal with this. The first one would be to involve part of the group in which this problem is taking place. So say you have a conflict in your family. Then you might ask other people who live in the family to sit with you and the person who's having a problem and help you work it out. If you have a problem at work, then you would ask the people you work with. You know, you can choose maybe one or two people to be your, you know, your counselors, and this other person finds other two people, and again, you work it out. If that also does not work, we have a College of Justice. So three people that we elect because we consider them wise, and every year, you know, we have elections for this, and then you can go to them and say, okay, look, we've tried everything, we really have different opinions, we can't agree on this, we want your opinion. When you go to the College of Justice in Damanor and they make a decision, then you have to stick to it. So before going there with a problem, people really try to work it out, because then, you know, then that decision is the final decision.
Great. I love the whole concept of quasi-real and the like bringing in perceptions into the cultural understanding of the community. It's a great way to actually view the world through. And I guess in more traditional Western cultures, there's the black and white of law that and regulations, and I think just bringing in the shades of grey and allowing that real human aspect to resolve conflict to come through is really very, very powerful and very inspiring as well.
And also, you know, when you live with 20 people, you really need to have a lot of sense of humour. A good sense of humor. So many things that could create conflict, you know, that you just say, okay, no problem, because you know, you see that, you know, everybody has different moods, everybody has different times, everybody sometimes is, you know, more tired than other times, and you know for sure that it's going to happen to you too, so you can just say, be more welcoming and more loving and say, okay, you know, now Esther is having, you know, two difficult hours, let's leave her alone, tomorrow she'll be in a better mood, and for sure it's going to happen to me also. So you really start to see that we are really all together on this journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Now this one...
Which is what happens when you love someone, doesn't it? You know, when you love someone, you can have conflict, you can have an argument, but if you really love them, you know that's just a part of you having an argument. And then there's also the other part that is the love, the support, and what you have together that is still there. So in a community like ours, you expand this idea of, you know, being welcoming and loving just to many more people.
Yeah.
And again, the more you expand to people, what you're really doing is the more you're expanding and opening to yourself. And this is what this is why it works, because this is what we found out, that, you know, if I can welcome in my heart more people and being softer with many people, I become much more welcoming, loving, and softer with myself.
That's really interesting. I guess, again, in most Western societies, like the family unit's actually getting smaller and smaller. So I guess, like, as individuals, we're probably becoming less and less welcoming to others. But I just love the whole idea that by expanding your being, expanding your nature, and actually welcoming people in, that you actually get to realize yourself in a much deeper and more profound way.
Yeah, and also this fragmentation, you know, this is what you're saying is absolutely true. The family becoming smaller and smaller has been a fantastic invention of consumerism, so that we can buy more washing machines, more dryer, more everything. Because if you have a family unit that is one person, that person is going to need all of that. And this is, you know, taking our planet, as we know, to the verge of destruction. So I think it's really urgent that we start also looking into the social and political mechanisms that have been leading us so far, and, you know, really experiment with something different.
That's a really,
because all of these aspects, you know, the social, they are really, do really have an impact on the sustainability of life on this planet. These are not times in which, you know, we can consider them as separate things anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was just wondering, that's a really fertile area for discussion. I was just wondering if you could actually talk about the actual material dynamics of the household. Like you mentioned, there were 20 people in the house. What about in terms of the utilities? Are there one washing machine, one refrigerator, or what sort of dynamic does a larger family unit have in terms of material? Good.
Well, we have what we need. So my family, we are 20. We have 5 washing machines of different sizes. So, you know, one very large, a kind of professional, a smaller one for smaller things. So just, you know, you just organize yourself according to a little bit of common sense. We have just one large kitchen. If you come to my house, and I hope you will. We have our kitchen is like that of a restaurant. And
wow.
Most of our families, when we build, you know, we store the homes, that's what we do, because then, you know, that you can cook for 20 people without too many problems. So you just get organized differently. And for us, it's very important to have a relationship with the land. So all of our homes have, you know, fruit orchards or a vegetable garden. And we try to be locally sustainable as much as we can, not only locally in the valley, but, you know, up to the point of locally to the house where you live. Because this idea of sustainability and renewable energies for us is absolutely fundamental, very, very important. And this year, we have had an important recognition by the Earth Charter Initiative. I don't know if you know about the Earth Charter, but it's a declaration of principles for a sustainable and just society for the 21st century presented at UNESCO. And some of the people, the founders and the creators of this document, these guidelines, came to Damanhur and were really impressed and said, you really are an example of the application of these principles for sustainability and equity. So, you know, this was I was really happy to hear that. After 35 years, you know, and as we said in the beginning, you know, it's not always been easy. We've been attacked, so we still have people that say horrible things about us, and hey, what can you do? You know, I think that this is what happens to everybody's trying to do something beautiful, and all we can do is to be, you know, do the best that we can and trying to really be a positive example and say to people, come and see, come and meet us, see what we've done and do even better.
Absolutely. So in terms of like people like listening to the call from all around the world, and like to actually have that kind of recognition from the Earth Charter as really bringing about a sustainable model, what advice could you give to people living in other parts of the world that may or may not be in a community setting at the moment to actually like integrate some of these sustaining principles into their own day-to-day life?
I would say, first of all, don't wait. Take action. There are thousands of ways in which we can make a difference. Don't think that you need to be wealthy. Don't think that you need for someone to come and tell you what to do. Don't think that you need to be, you know, Superman or Superwoman, because everybody can make a difference. And just start doing it. Really do it. Everywhere around the world. I mean, in England, there is this fantastic movement called Transition Towns. They are doing amazing stuff. In the U.S., there is a lot of awakening also happening. So don't wait. The resources are there. Go on the internet. Go around. Check out people that are already doing this and, you know, and join forces. Don't wait. Don't wait.
Yeah. You mentioned, like, the whole awakening of the planet. And I think, like, certainly many people that are exploring spirituality and spiritual concepts and personal development, they're awakening very quickly now, it seems. And I was just wondering, in terms of actually the role that Dam and Her plays in helping the rest of the world awaken, how does Dam and Her as a community see their role in actually being a leader and a facilitator of that transformation?
I think probably mostly in two ways. The first one is by being so open and say to people, come here, see what we do, and also the fact that people can use the temples as their own place for awakening and inspiration. So the temples are open for visits. They're open for personal and group meditation. They're open for initiations and ceremonies of all different spiritual schools of the world. They're open for weddings if people want to use them to celebrate their union. So I think, you know, on the spiritual, and they are a powerful spiritual activator, no matter what your spiritual path is. So this is one important way, you know, being open and telling people, come here, use what we've done, use what we've built, and, you know, and share this part of the awakening with us. And the second, I think, is the fact that we are, like now, you are helping me to, you know, speak about Dhamma, the fact that we are going around the world to say, we exist. If we did it, you can do it. Next month, I'm speaking at this conference in Brazil for the State of the World Forum, all on climate change and new possible formulas that go, you know, from technological to social technology. I will do the same in November in Washington. So we are really sending people around the world to crucial places where other people are meeting to say, here's what we can contribute, you know, what, tell us what can be useful, and we're open to welcome and experiment and also try different things. You know, if people suggest different things, we are the ideal laboratory because we are not too small not to see the results and not too large that you can actually guide the transformation and see what happens.
Mm. Absolutely. I think I just love the whole concept of a social laboratory. Sounds very, very, very intriguing.
Yeah, it was actually a very nice definition that was given to us by Irving Laszlo. You probably know him. He's a very famous scientist and philosopher and the founder of the Club of Budapest. And he, writing about, as he said, Dhamma is a social laboratory for the future of humanity. I thought, wow, what a great definition.
It's a great term. Now, this question actually comes from Lucille in South Africa. And Lucille asks, how does one create a space of trust so that people are willing to engage in a community so that they are willing to both use it and also give back to it?
More than what I already said, the fact that, you know, to recognize that you're all on the same journey, you all feel the same, we all have the same wishes, we all have the same fears, which is already very important. So this idea of the quasi-real and not being so aggressive. In a practical way, I would also say rotate tasks. If you are creating a new community, it is important that everybody gets the possibility of having a role, a say, and also to test out in practice what their talents are. And many communities end after a few years because there is somebody who has the idea of creating them, which is great. You, of course, need a leader in the beginning. It's indispensable. But then this leader needs to let others also lead. He needs to be able to incorporate the ideas of others. So this balance between having the vision, being the leader, and at the same time empowering others is the secret. People cannot trust you if you don't trust them. So the whole mechanism has to be in balance.
That's a really interesting concept about with the leadership and just these new emergent leadership models that we're seeing in the world. And I guess traditionally we've seen leadership in a very forward-moving sort of orientation and leaders just going after what they want and just expecting everyone else to fall in behind. But with the new leadership models that are emerging, like I love the fact that they're becoming more inclusive and they're involving people in decision-making and being, like, rather than actually leading from the front, often a lot of them are actually leading from behind and pushing the people forward. To take responsibility and to be a part of something greater.
Absolutely, and also sharing a common dream. This dream has to become everybody's dream. You can't have the dream of one person and the other one is just adapting to that dream because it's not going to work. So, of course, you need an inspirator or, you know, a group of inspirators, but some little spark in the beginning that has the vision and has a dream. But that dream has to be vast enough that also the dreams of others are contained in it. Then it becomes a collective dream. Then if you have a collective dream, things that seem impossible become possible. And I think this is one of the most beautiful gifts that Dharma has to give. You know, it's a proof that it is possible. If you have a shared dream, nothing can stop you. That's what we have created. Other people can create something completely different. But it is important to be able to share a dream. And not just follow the dream of somebody else. If you think of all the people that made an impact on our planet, they were always great visionaries with a big heart and the ability to inspire others so that also the dream of these other people could become real and alive.
That's very, very powerful. Now, this question comes from Melina in Bulgaria. And Melina asks, are people who live in Damanhur vegetarians?
In Dhamma, there are people who are vegetarian and other people who are not. We believe in the fact that everybody has the must, you know, be able to choose what they feel is good for themselves. And we don't want any of these choices in these spheres of life to become a dogma. So people can choose. We try to eat a little bit. Personally, I'm vegetarian, but there are people who are not. Most people are not. And you know, people can choose what is best for them. From a spiritual point of view, we think that it is important to respect all living beings, which includes animals and plants at the same identical level. So it's not because we don't hear a carrot scream that, you know, we are not eating something which is alive. So what is really important is the attitude that you have. In terms of the meat that we eat, we raise the animals and we make sure they are respected, they have a good life, and we have specific rituals, you know, for offering their experience so that nothing gets lost.
I guess that concept of living free from dogma would extend to being all-encompassing or welcoming of different spiritual traditions as well?
Yes, of course, as the search for the essence. And what we're trying to do here is to create something that is unique, that is the essence of this, and also something that has a little bit of an idea of what could work for the future. You know, what would be the path for the future that could be original? So in that sense, we are original and new also. So basically,
well,
you know, what I'm saying, I don't know if it was, you know, just to specify, like many spiritual schools in the world, we believe that we actually have a divine origin, and that's what we need to awaken. And the way that we are creating to awaken our divinity is original and taps into the essence of all the other schools of the planet to create something that is born also directly out of our own experience.
Spirit A, we're getting very close to the end of the hour, and I just wanted to actually thank you for coming on and the call and actually sharing the community with our listeners all around the world. It's certainly like having met you and having listened to share your passion and your excitement about the work that's been done at Damaher and actually personally going out there and spreading it around the world as well by traveling and sharing the learnings and the discoveries so other people can benefit as well. I think it's a real testimony to that you are in fact living the principles that you tell other people to live as well. I was just wondering, I'm sure that there are many other people on the call or indeed people who will listen back to this recording who have been very inspired by what you've shared. And I was just wondering if you could let people know how they can actually find out more about the Damaher community and also more about your own work as well.
Sure. They can go online. That's very easy. We have a website, and it's www.damanhur.info. And Damanhur is D-A-M-A-N-H-U-R, Damanhur. Damaner.info, so that would take them directly to the English website. And if you want to write to me, you're welcome to do so. My email is my name, Esperide, Esperide, @damaner.it for Italy.
Great. And you've also written some books as well, Esperide, on Damaner.
Yeah.
And a comic as well, I believe.
And a comic, yeah, which was a great fun to write. The comic is available in English inside a book called The Traveler's Guide to Damaner, which is for sale on Amazon. And it's really funny, and I highly recommend it. It's the story of Damaner, but in an interesting science fiction context, because I love science fiction, so I created something quite special in that context. And then the other book is about the Temples of Humankind, also available on Amazon.
Yeah. And did you find that you're a natural comic book writer?
I don't know.
How was the creative process?
I don't know. I had a lot of fun. So I'm very, you know, this is the great thing about life in Damaher. You really can get to experiment with many things. I've been really, really lucky. I can think of things and then just do them, and they seem to happen in the end.
That's amazing. Cool. Okay.
And of course, the last thing, if people are interested more in my consulting work, then they can go to the pearlgroup.net website, pearlgroup.net, and then they will find all about Realize and this beautiful work that I'm doing together with my dear friend David.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you could just elaborate a little bit more on the work you have done with the Pearl Group. Like, I've had the opportunity to experience part of it, and I was just wondering if you could actually elaborate that on for people as well and how you work with the Pearl Group.
Yeah, I think that David Pearl, founder of the group, is a genius in using creativity and a light touch to obtain really profound transformation in people and companies. So together we've been combining some of the results of my own research and the work of Damaner with his incredible insights experience with performing, put together, creating this, I think, rather innovative formulas to bring on transformation, renewal, new ideas for companies and business people. They're looking for a new way to have an impact on the planet. Again, in a sustainable and more loving, more encompassing way. So I'm really, really happy that I'm also working with David. It's always an opportunity also for me to learn.
No, I can echo those statements. I think just bringing that creativity and that self-expression, and also the pursuit of the individual uniqueness as well. It's incredibly powerful work, and I'm very fortunate to have experienced it myself. Great. So just in closing, Esperide, I was just wondering if you had any last final words for people who are sitting at home thinking about living their lives with more intention, and also, I guess, developing more community-based approaches to living.
Yeah, I know I have to repeat it, but what I would really like to say is follow your dream and do not wait.
Excellent.
That's really, I think, what I want to say. Follow your dreams and not wait, and you'll find more and more dreams to share with others, and more people that are actually doing the same. And do it practical. We need action. Spirituality now needs to be combined with action if we want to make a difference.
Great. Well, it's amazing. Some fantastic words to finish on. Follow your dreams and do not wait. Great. So thanks so much, Esperide, for sharing your wisdom this evening. It's been a pleasure to have you on the call.
Thank you, Dingen, and thank you, everybody who's been listening.
Yeah, and thank you, everyone at home. It's an inspiration to be able to share these inspiring thoughts with you from wherever you're listening in throughout the world. Please do come back to the site regularly and share it with all your friends. This call recording will actually be made available on the site tomorrow morning, so do come back and share your comments on the call and give your feedback. We value the questions that you send in each week, and we also value the feedback that you give after the calls. So thank you again to everyone at home. Excellent. Okay, thanks, Esperide.
Thank you, Damien, and we'll speak tomorrow. Bye.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Bye.